Seek with all learning, love overrules war. A quote I found at Professor John Searle's website, swallowcommand.com, and words he obviously lives by. I interviewed John at least 15 years ago when I started hearing about the Searle Effect Generator. By age 14, John was deciphering his dreams and created a free energy device which amazingly began lifting off the ground. His levitation device followed, and the technology of the future was alive and well in Britain in the 1940s. Today and next week, we are joined by John Searle and filmmaker Bradley Lockerman, whose award-winning documentary, The John Searle Story, chronicles John's life, his work creating a free energy device, and the trials that accompany any free-thinking pioneer whose work goes against the grain of the status quo. I'm Robin Clare. Stay tuned. This is Tributaries. John, this is indeed a pleasure, and it feels fair to say that the generator itself is motivating and vibrating you from the zero-point field.
That's the only thing that keeps me going. If it wasn't for the SEG, I think I wouldn't have been around these days.
There's something about the SEG, and we'll certainly get into that. It's about being able to spend more time in time when you're creating something from this level that you do.
Agreed, yes.
We're going to start at the very beginning here, and for anyone who's been listening to Tributaries for quite some time, I believe my first interview with John Searle was, gosh, it had to have been at least 16 years ago, John.
Yes, a long time.
Tell us about these dreams and how with exact regularity they eventually brought you out of being afraid of them to recognizing what they were telling you.
First of all, what people got to realize is that they were two different dreams, but related. So I called them Dream 1, Dream 2. They alternated. So you first had Dream 1, then a couple of months later you have Dream 2, then you go back to Dream 1 2 months later, and then finishing the year off with a second one. This carried on for 6 years, and then the first dream really started to come into reality. That's the part, the first dream, where it says that all the children I know would vanish, where in fact the school record said it was I that vanished, which is basically the same thing as the dream is saying, is that you are going to disappear from everyone you know. And that, I'm afraid, has remained so to this day. I've not seen any of those children again. But the first dream is the mathematics of the project. And to make that come into reality was when I was put into a job as an apprentice to become an electrical engineer. It was the socket I was taking to the store that caught my eye, and that made me ask the foreman, what does that mean, a 2? And then at the back of the 2, at the top, was another 2, and he replied, 2 squares. So I said, well, what is 2 squares? So he draws on a piece of paper, 2 by 2 squares is a block. I said, well, each space must have some value. He said, no. So when I got back to my accommodation, I was working on these numbers. 1 square, I was trying to see what on earth that could do. And then I tried the 2 squares, and each of these, you couldn't make anything out of them. So I thought, well, I'd try the 3 squares, and then after a bit of fiddling around, it worked. So 3 squares was saying that this is the beginning of the 2 squares. So what is square 1 and square 2? Well, clearly, they are DNAs of everything. So we now have isolated that the squares are really based on the DNA structure. So that when you got the first one right, they're all built up from that one. And so you can work out any square you wish at a very, very fast record time. The next thing is the content in that first dream is telling you that I'm going to be dealing with some very high energy, smaller than the normal size machines, but will give out a lot more energy. But what it's also telling me is that there's a time limit to achieve this, or otherwise the children of these children would not be drawn their old age pension money. So there was an urgency that this technology was developed. The second dream really is telling you about the flying side, and it's linked to the mathematics in the first dream. But it is saying you will be involved in this flying side. The experts will tell you that you'll be burnt to death. You won't survive. And what he's saying is, take no notice of them. Don't be afraid. Nothing will happen. So we had an instruction. Then the trouble was, I had to get in the right place at the right time for these triggers to fall into place. And my first job was the first trigger of solving this puzzle. So basically, it was really a simple thing. You just had to be in the right job to find the links to make the whole system work, only to find out by 1968 that experts had already proven the technology early 18th century. And by the end of that period, movies were using that demonstration to make their films more exciting. But they still had to wait 200 years for the whole thing to be engineered as a motor, which meant that Einstein had to come along, they had to discover the rare earth, then they had what this fool that would be born in the workhouse in England to be born, so that he would put all these ideas together and make that engine, solar effect generator.
We'll go into the generator in just a moment, and I'm just wondering, but I know a lot of people are certainly aware of the work Tesla has done. Is it, without going into full scientific description, do you see a relationship to what Tesla was doing with what you have with the Searle effect generator?
Some effects, obviously, in this construction is obviously part of what Tesla was doing. The trouble is here, it's caused for a different magnetization system, which we are redeveloping in San Diego for mass production purposes. It's just that conventional magnetism does not work.
We also have Bradley on the line. Hi, Bradley.
Hello, Robin.
When you first met John Searle and had a long discussion with him, I'm sure he spoke with you about the law of squares and how that led him into working with and originating his work. What was your original understanding of all of this?
Well, for me, it was an opening of an enormously important door. My background is in chemistry. Although I never got a degree, I did gain enough knowledge to be dangerous. But when John Searle first met me, I didn't quite know what to make of him, except that I liked him right off the bat. His beautiful blue eyes, and they sparkled, and here was this individual that started to tell me a story that absolutely rocked my world. I thought, this is the wildest thing I'd ever heard, a power source, a generator, that also has this property of levitation. Because of the field densities, it has this inverse gravity effect. So that for me, being in Hollywood and show business, et cetera, I thought, oh my gosh, this is the most off-the-wall, wonderful, tremendous story I'd ever heard in my life, and I can't wait to tell it. So my thing with John was to be able to bring his story to everybody I could possibly talk to and speak with. As far as the law of the squares, it's not as difficult. People take a look at it. They know it primarily like Sudoku or just magic squares. They still teach it somewhere on planet Earth as a mathematical system that simply exists, but it's not so puzzling. It's actually quite simple once you understand the very basics of it. You can see that it applies to everything.
John, I want to get back with you regarding the significance of the fact that your energy device also is an inverse gravity vehicle. And a lot of people think of these things as anti-gravity devices, but the fact that this works as an inverse gravity vehicle means there's no anti-anything and working with nature as opposed to being anti-anything. Isn't that correct?
That's correct, yes. What we're simply doing is we're taking part, well, the half at least, of the Earth energy in what we call gravitation, and we invert it, and that way it gets a push. The structure is pushed instead of being pulled. But it's inside what we got here. It's not something you're creating new. It's the material already here that we're using.
Yes, so going back to, I guess, by age 14, I don't think you would mind me letting everyone know that you are in your 80s now. And at the ripe young age of 14, you were actually creating this device, and it was a free energy device initially.
It's a free energy from the fact that you don't have to pay for the energy you're using. But of course, you got paid for the machine.
Of course, yes.
And that's the only trouble. But it has many advantages. A, as far as we can tell, it'll never wear out. So it's an investment you pass down to your family. They pass it on to their family, and it just keeps on passing on from family to family. So if you've got one of these machines, it's perhaps one of the best investments on the market today.
Of course. Let's move back to 1968 when you were experimenting with this device, how the undergrowth was pulled up from where it was and there was an ionization going on. Tell us a little bit of that story and what it looked like.
The scientists investigating this effect said that the problem was there was iron in the soil. The iron got charged as the power built up, and of course, as you lift, so would the iron try to follow you. So what we had to do, we had to work on how to prevent this. What happened in the end, it was a simple thing. We just changed the way we laid the material up. Instead of having the rare earth on the outside of the plate, we then put it on the inside. And funny, that changed the complete magnetic effect. Instead of it being a ring around the equator of the craft, focusing on the ground, it now was a complete donut effect around the equator of the craft. So we now contain the magnetic field in a band instead of it aiming at the Earth. So it did not take a hard job to work out what to do.
You speak about the rare earth.
The rare earth is only called rare earth because they have a lot more electrons than the normal atoms. And those extra electrons, build up enough of them, then you've got a kickstart that can make the rollers move. And this sort of effect we can show you down at the lab. And of course, I'd like to personally invite you to take a trip down to the lab and see with your own eyes. And through that force we are creating, that one day will become a standard in every home producing electricity for the people of the United States.
I do definitely plan to go over there. It's in San Diego. And Bradley, why don't you share some of what's going on over there at the workspace in San Diego with the John Searle effect generator?
Yes, I'll be glad to. The key thing here is that everything that we're doing down at SMI, Searle Magnetics, Inc., is based upon the concept hardware. Once I saw in 1996 that those layered elements do indeed hold a charge. In other words, you can stick a probe of an oscilloscope to the center, stick the other probe to the rim, and you can see a measurable charge, 3 to 5 to 7 volts, and some even higher. Once you know that the charge is in there, in these layered materials, that was step one. Step two in the hardware was being able to move those. If you can move those component parts, then you have simple induction, according to Maxwell. The third one was the discovery of those eddy currents, what John Searle has been saying all of his life, talking about the eddy currents. We can put a piece of a specific magnet, magnetized John Searle's way, in your hand, and you put it in proximity to a non-magnetic material, copper in this case, and you'll feel a repulsive force. That's the most unusual and the most exciting of the demonstrations. And then, of course, there's the simple wire demonstration that shows the path of those electrons. And it's this concept hardware down at Searle Magnetics that makes us know that we need to take the next step. The next step, of course, is with all of that hardware in place, Fernando Morris did an absolutely magnificent job in putting together the laboratory and the office down in San Diego. And we have accumulated since October of 2010 sufficient tooling, magnetizers, CNC machines, presses, microscopes. And if you go to YouTube, the John Searle Story channel, you can see a progressive set of updates, short films that will show people the progress down at Searle Magnetics. The key thing here always comes down to resources. We're a very humble outfit, and we're very determined in what we're doing. And we know what it is that we'll have to do in terms of the next steps. I think the most important thing is to have a comfort zone in terms of our support and resources in order to move forward. We all wear 5 or 6 different hats. We're always doing different jobs. But we're very pleased, and a great big pat on the back for the chief engineer down there, Fernando Morris, and, of course, Tom Davis, who's another one of our engineers down there.
John, tell us about the time when you were originally using this device to run the energy of your home.
At Mortimer, in Berkshire, I ran my home for 31 years on the SEG, and Reverend George Nixon had tested it. We made him a smaller version for him to use when he became very ill, and he survived. When the doctors at the hospital had given him only 2 weeks, he survived for another 10 years. So the SEG proved to him to be a very worthwhile investment. Though his machine was a lot smaller than the one I was using in Mortimer.
This is an amazing side effect of having free energy. You also had an experience where you yourself were burned quite drastically, and yet just hanging out with this Searle effect generator, it cleared up the burns on your body.
Yes. First of all, without the SEG, of course, I would, as the hospital said to me, would have to wear a mask to hide the face damage so that people didn't feel sick when they saw you. But what happened there was that a tank of oil exploded as I was carrying it out because somebody had turned the power on underneath it. It said the saucepan and brought it to red-hot heat. And I simply tried to get it outside to cool off, and the draft from the window exploded it. Of course, I was right at the center of the blast, which stripped the wall of all the paint, the electric light bulb, cables, and the fuse boxes, everything absolutely disintegrated from that blast. So I was very lucky to survive.
And then what is it about the Searle Effect Generator that creates a healing effect?
The real beauty of the Searle Effect Generator is that it pumps out millions of negative ions, and that is what you lose in any explosion. And the blood cannot carry the amount of negative ions to the damaged area. By having a supply from outside, not only is it keeping the room clean, really clean, of bacteria, viruses, it's also adding those vital negative ions you need for the rebuilding of the damage to the skin. And, of course, it took the face itself healed reasonably quick. Took about 7 days. But the neck was still terrible bad, and they had to pump some pedicine into me. But 7 days later, even that was healed up. Unfortunately, for about 3 years, I looked more like a strange object. One half of my face and neck was white, and in the winter, bluey, and the other face was normal, other side. But now, today, the sun has bleached that one bad side, the right side, so it looks almost identical to the left. So it did a good job. It saved me looking disfigured.
I've done some research on the web, and there is a little YouTube about how the Russian scientists have vindicated your work and reproduced it, and it talks of having 7,000 watts of power while losing 30% of the weight. And what do you see as the significances of this, John? Because I know you started out doing free energy device, and then you made the discovery, or the discovery was put upon you. You'd set these devices out, and then they would just go up into the sky and disappear. Were you shocked? Yeah. Were you so surprised when this happened initially?
Well, yes, because I was only hoping to produce a generator that could power your home, your cooker and heaters and that. And quite naturally, when it left off the table, which is contrary to every scientific book I've ever read, I went to pull it down from the ceiling, and I couldn't. So I had to ask her to push a big screwdriver in the effort to stop the rollers rotating. And then that was the big problem. Having been able to put it off the ceiling, I couldn't let go of it because the hands were frozen. So I had to ask her to get warm water to pour my hands until I could free them from it. And naturally, one would think, well, all you need to do is put a heavy weight, a lead plate on the bottom of it. That will stop it. But unfortunately, it don't work that way. It just gives a little bit more energy to the system, enough energy to push it through your ceiling and out through your roof. So you've now got a house that you can't live in, and you haven't got your motor because that's gone.
Oh, dear. John, it's so counterintuitive that these devices run cold and not hot. Usually if something's revving up, it will get hotter and hotter, and these devices run cold. And that has to do with something about the scalar waves. Is there something that you'd like to say about that?
What is happening is that we are using a rare earth in which we are drawing the electrons, the free electrons, off. It does not like to be minus of electrons. So it pulls in the electrons from the fabric around itself to keep replacing them. There is a point where, in the end, you get a chain reaction. You keep drawing power. Then immediately it sets up this chain reaction where it keeps on pulling these electrons in, and therefore the machine gets colder and colder, because the electrons have less room to move. So they bump together. They haven't got so much heat to release. Eventually, you get them so tightly packed that they cannot hardly move, so there's no heat. Obviously, the unit runs cold. The more power you take, the colder it gets. Unfortunately, you get about 4 Kelvin, then the whole physics reverse itself. It's no longer drawn down by the Earth's magnetic field and gravity. It is now pushed up away from there, so it becomes an individual satellite of its own right.
Bradley, why is the Searle effect generator considered the perfect machine?
Oh my gosh, I think the primary thing is that it is a solid-state standalone unit that is really very simple in what appears to be great complexity. It takes principles that we've known for decades, and it simply applies them in a different design. And people get a little bit estranged, shall we say, when they start to look at this because, they want to know what goes in the middle. Where do you put the gasoline? Where does the fuel go, et cetera, et cetera? And just like John was saying a moment ago, if you take a rare earth, any of the rare earths, the outer shell of a single atom, and most everybody can understand that, you know, the atoms are composed of electrons traveling around a center made up of protons and neutrons. Those electrons, they're the only piece of the atom that can move. What John does is he takes those electrons off of the rare earth using magnetic fields, and he simply pulls them through these layered elements. Once you have those electrons moving in a particular direction, then you've got current. Is that right, John?
Yes, that is correct.
There's such a beauty to this because it's almost the feminine of machinery, whereas, you know, all these other scientists, you hear of them building underground because they're going to smash all these atoms to bits and see what kind of energy. It's like little boys playing instead of...
Yes. Oh, good point. Yeah, they do. And that's one of my favorite parts of what John said. And my gosh, he said that when I first met him and first went over to London. Way back in the early to mid-90s. And it just fascinated me that he said they're always hitting things with a hammer, breaking them apart to see what comes out. And you can do this by influencing the same situation. You have magnetics, you have electrons moving, you have resonance, and you have frequency, which all operates on the quantum level. And people get thrown by the word quantum. It just means the level that comprises all things. Everything's made up of atoms. Everything's made up of molecules. And all of that activity down there is influenced by plus minus magnetic fields, north, south, plus minus. So it's really not a hard thing to understand.
What it reminds me of is synchronicity in living,
yes,
uniformity and resonance and coherence. And I want to share this right now in that, as mentioned earlier, I did an interview with John somewhere around 16, 18 years ago. And then a few years after that, I got to meet you, John, over in London and spent a lovely afternoon. That was it for a long time until this past February when I was speaking about John to someone. And then I come home and within the week, Bradley, I heard from you saying, John Searle says hello and let's get something going again. And it's just uniformity, resonance, coherence.
Yeah, and you know, you're very right about what you said a moment ago because not only solid state, but benign. It's a very benign situation. We've had people with alphabet soup degrees behind their name, and they come in and they look at the SEG mock-up, and they wonder what goes in the middle of the hole. Well, you can't see what goes in the hole because you can't see electrons wanting to go towards a positive destination. If you strip that center, that core, if you pull those electrons off, it's going to leave a positive destination. And electrons, which are all around us, are going to find their way to that positive source, that positive point. But it is, it's benign. And I love the way you said that.
More next week with John Searle and filmmaker Bradley Lockerman. JohnSearleStory.com can link you up to any of this information. And we will also let you know when we'll be showing that documentary in Boulder. For any guest information, to listen to archives and share resources, it's tributariesradio.wordpress.com. I'm Robin Clare. Thanks for staying tuned.